Welcome to Moot Point, the Swedish War Machine and Hordes podcast. Moot Point is sponsored by Iron Moot, the greatest War Machine and Hordes convention in the Nordics. Hello and welcome to the podcast. My name is Jocke.
And my name is Christopher.
And today we're going to talk about Kharchev.
Oh yeah.
But since this is our first episode, we're going to start with talking a little bit about ourselves, who we are, and why we're doing this.
Yes. My name is Christopher Wedding, and I was Circle player for a lot of years, and then I've switched over to Retribution, and I've also dabbled a bit in Trolls. In one tournament.
One is enough. If you win it.
Exactly. And then never play them again. And I've also won the Nordic Invitational 2 years at Iron Moot. And this year I participated in organizing the Iron Moot together with Jocke and a few other from here.
Yep. So I'm Jocke Rapp, or Jock Rapp, as I'm known on the international podcasts. I play Kador and Mercenaries and Trollbloods. Right now I'm playing Kador. It will probably be Mercenaries after the WTC that is coming up in just a few weeks from right now. I'm a fairly accomplished player, not as good as Christopher, but I've won a couple of Swedish tournaments. I once was the King of Ireland during the Irish Masters.
And the most important achievement is that you are leading the Christopher Jocke League.
Yes, yes. So I am better at War Machine than Christopher is. It's a fact.
Exactly. And we've both been captains to WTC for Sweden.
Yep. We currently are captains as well for two of the three teams. Although Christopher's team always places higher than mine for unknown reasons.
Yeah, totally unknown.
It's weird. This podcast is just the two of us talking, or at least it is currently. We might have some guests on in the future.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully, if anyone wants to come. We record in my house. I've set up a super professional studio inside one of my rooms. It's not professional.
It's kind of professional. Yeah, there might be a few children's coming in and talking to us.
Exactly. So don't mind them. We're both living in Gothenburg, in Sweden, so English is not our native language, as you might pick up, but we'll do our best. We're also going to talk a little bit about the Iron Moot, which is the biggest convention in the Nordics. The first, the really big War Machine Hordes only convention, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And we had it in the middle of August this year, and it was the biggest Iron Moot yet.
Yeah, we were, we were at least a little over 100 participants. I don't know the exact number. But Iron Moot is organized every year in August. At least it will be next year in August, so in 2017. And we have Iron Gauntlet qualifiers and Iron Arena and a lot of good stuff. And me and Christopher are two of the main organizers.
Exactly. And if you wondered about the name of the podcast, it's a very, very clever pun.
Yes, because we're very, very clever.
Exactly.
Okay, so should we move on to what we do on the podcast?
Yes. So every episode, we will either have a list or a caster that we want to analyze and see what tactics you want to use and what models work best together and what synergies we see and what we want to play the list against.
Yeah, and we will mainly focus on things that you might run into in a tournament, or things that might be interesting primarily for tournament players, I would say, because we are both primarily playing in tournaments.
Exactly. But we'll try to not just post internet list or the current net deck, because that would be kind of boring.
Exactly. And we're in the second part of the podcast mission statement is to talk about tournaments that we go to. So after each big tournament or convention, we're going to have basically battle reports and tournament reports, talk about who we met and what games we played and what color shots we drank.
Exactly.
So hopefully you guys will like it. And as I said, today we're going to talk about Kharchev. The format is that we as Christopher said, we're going to talk about the caster, and then we're going to play a game, hopefully, each time we record the podcast. And we're going to play the game against the other person's, one of the other person's tournament lists, basically. So it becomes a proper test.
Yes.
But Karchev is a little bit interesting in Mark III. As a Kator player, I looked at him when Mark III were released, and I wasn't very impressed at all. It looked like he lost his big thing with the toe and so on. But it turned out that he has some hidden qualities.
Yeah. I think the first thing I saw when I looked at him was that he had a lot of warjack points, and he's basically heavy himself. It's harder than most heavies and survives basically everything. If you play him, you have a lot more points than if you play Butcher Fee, for example. And it still hits extremely hard, and it's very hard to kill.
Yeah, he got Unyielding, which puts him at 12-21 in close combat with 34 boxes. So based on raw stats, he's probably the most hard-to-kill caster.
Yeah, and also with new focus camp rules, he will usually be able to remove a few of them. I'm not sure if that's a bonus or not, because since he has such high armor anyway.
I don't know, he...
Because he's usually not camp a lot, I guess.
No, but I think he prefers the new focus camp rules over the old, because he can't camp 5, or sometimes he can, but there's a lot of turns when he has to camp less than that, that it's nice to remove the extra high damage.
So what would you say are his main strengths?
Well, his main strength is the feet, which enables him to use very jacks that punch below the curve and have a really, really good feet turn, where everything gets boosted attack and damage rolls. And his second thing, apart from being really, really hard to kill, which is probably his main thing, maybe. Maybe that's his main thing.
Actually, in this meta we have seen, that's a really important thing, actually.
Yeah, so his big thing is hard to kill. Second is his feat. And third is a spell that gives the battle group counter charge. It's called Battle Charged, maybe.
I think people usually overlook that and just look at Warpath, or whatever it's called now.
Road to War.
Exactly. And like just see that as a warrior threat extinction. But if you play a lot of warjacks, which he basically will always do with his feet and other abilities, then the counter charge is extremely important, and it makes it really hard to play against. Like counter charge on one or two models is easy to counter, because you have to run something engaging or stay out of six. But if you have a counter charge on like 10 models, then that becomes a real problem.
Yeah, because the usual way to lessen the impact of counter charge is to engage. And if you, while engaging, get countercharged by something else, it makes it pretty difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
And
it also means that one, if you have some cheap warriors, they can countercharge and stand in front of other guys. So if you're charging a unit, one of them might charge in, and then again will countercharge, and then he will stand in the way, so that the other guys must charge him instead of the act they wanted to charge, or Karchev, or something.
Exactly. It creates a really hard-to-solve puzzle, on top of being a very sturdy army.
Yeah. And I will also say that another very important thing for him is his ranged attack, the spray, mostly because it can knock things down.
Yeah, he has a range 10, a POW 12 auto-knockdown spray. Only rat 5, but he can boost. That's usually what he is, I would say, his prime use for his focus, apart from upkeeping the battle-charged spell, is to make sure he boosts on his spray. So the list that I'll be playing... Oh, maybe I should say something about the Road to War battle charge interaction. I've played quite a few games with Karchev in Mark III. I have never cast Road to War in a single game. So I wouldn't call that his primary upkeep.
I think that depends on what battle group you use, though. Like, you could have a battle group where you try to sling a good jack like Ruin very far on feet.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the best way to play him.
No. I think if you want to have a very good threat range on heavy in Kador, there are a lot better options available.
Yeah,
you can play just silly things like Strakov, or more reliable things like
Vlad 1.
Yeah, exactly, Vlad 1 or Kozlov, who no one plays. Okay, so the list.
Maybe you should say the idea behind the list first.
Yeah. Yeah, why it was created. Well, we were going to talk about a list filled with mad dogs. basically. That's what it comes down to. A lot of people probably discovered that the new Mad Dog Jack, that it got released in Mark II, but the model never came out, so it's basically a new Jack for Mark III. It only costs 7 points, and it's a heavy. It's the cheapest heavy in the game.
Yeah, and it's cheaper than most lights.
Yeah, exactly.
And it still has 31.
31 bucks.
Yeah, 31. And arm 18, which might not be the best stat line, but it's still good.
Yeah.
It's hard to kill.
It's very hard. And if you play a 75-point game with Karchev, who is plus 30 Warjack points, you can get exactly 15 Mad Dogs in your list. And 15 heavies is it's a lot.
15 heavies to counter charge and a feat that gives them boosted attack and damage rolls.
Exactly. And it sounds like a list that is made for funsies, something that you wouldn't actually play, because those lists usually have glaring weaknesses. And this list has the same weakness as most lists that is made just a single model. You have no support, you have no shaft to throw in the way, and you have no ranged attacks, and so on. But the thing is that if you have 15 heavies, you don't need chaff, turns out. All you need are 16 models with countercharge.
But when we created it, we might have been a bit drunk. And then I don't think we expected to be as good as it actually was.
No, we just we thought that it would be really funny to try it out. And we thought that you had to play really weird formations on the table to make it work. You run everything in a 5-3 formation or in a 8-by-2 formation with Karchev in the middle.
And then you played it against, I think, Gatsby 1 first.
Yeah.
Which is basically a list that can have a 5 armor swing on anything and has lots of hard-hitting infantry.
It was basically an anti-armor, armor swing list. And I got heavily up on the attrition, which none of us expected, actually. No. Because the list has a lot of tricks that you don't really count on. If you try to go up with high defense, there's a lot of ways to knock things down, either by Karchev spray or by just having so many Mad Dogs that you don't mind slamming your own Mad Dogs into the opponent.
Yeah, I mean, having 3 or even 4 Mad Dogs to kill one enemy model can be totally fine.
Yeah, exactly. You can sacrifice 2 Mad Dogs for one of the opponent's heavies and still trade up points-wise.
Exactly.
It's very weird.
And also against infantry, you could run the Mad Dog up, and then you can slam it in the butt and have it bowl over the enemy's models.
Exactly, which is, if you haven't faced Mad Dogs, then you will probably be caught off guard by that. I know I've caught a lot of people off guard with just bowling, just round one, bowling into their cautiously advancing infantry. It's very good, because the Mad Dogs, they have jury-rigged, so they are a very fast Kato Jack.
I think that the benefit of the Mad Dog is not just that it's cheap, because if it hadn't had your rig, which is plus 2 movement.
Plus 2 speed.
Plus 2 speed, sorry, for 1 movement box. And that means that you can get a really long way up the board. It also means that you can run and slam and trample far. And it also tramples for free and has boost attack and tramples.
Yeah.
So the Mad Dog is a very good anti-infantry act, actually. And then with Karchev, it, even if it only has power 14, it can do a lot of damage against a heavy, on the feet especially.
Yeah, it can take on Colossals. You've seen that. One of our WTC players, Johan Dylind, he played Karchev at Iron Moot, which was, I guess, the first showing of the Karchev Mad Dog spam list, at least that we know of.
Yeah.
And apart from catching people off guard, it proved to be very, very strong. He played in both the Iron Gauntlet finals, and he got to the Iron Moot Invitational, so the Sunday Masters finals, where he couldn't play Mad Dogs because he was locked out of it.
Exactly.
So the only match he lost in the Invitational was when he couldn't play Mad Dogs anymore.
Then he played against an arm-buffed Colossal with Epic Haley twice, and lost once and won once.
Turns out that the list isn't as pillow-fisted as you might think, especially if you get Karchev to your target, because boosted Pow 19s, they really do kill armor-buffed Colossals, even Stormwalls with armor 22. So there have been some evolution of the list. It started with Yuan. He took out one of the Mad Dogs and replaced it with some mechanics. We were thinking, after evaluating after the Iron Moot, that he probably put in too many mechanics, or at least that many wasn't necessary, because he put in a mini unit of mechanics and 2 Gubber Tinkers. And I think, personally, that the Gubber Tinkers are the most important part, because they're fast. And they repair a few boxes, which is everything you need. I think that the mechanics, in some games, you can get a lot of damage boxes back from the mechanics.
I think mechanics are basically only good if you're playing a colossal.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, I would say that. Because you don't need more boxes in that way. You need to have some of your mad dogs that are in crucial position to have functional systems, but you don't need the turn-to-turn recursion of boxes. Then it's better to just have more mad dogs. So after that, the list have changed again. We are going to try to put in Ruin, which means even less mad dogs, which is completely contrary to what I just said. But what would probably make the list shine, or the idea behind it, is that if you have, because card chip is a big hitter, and when you need to put something big down, like a armor buffed colossal, you need to deliver Karchev and under feet. And yeah. He is very vulnerable because it is your caster, after all. So if you could replace him, the heavy hitter in that sense, with a heavy instead. And Ruin does a very good job of taking on armor buffed colossal, since he has Dispel. He is also even more immune to control effects than Karchev is, because the main way to avoid getting TK'd or strangleholded with your caster and so on is to just have a lot of mad dogs around him. That works for Ruin as well, but he also is spell immune. It's pretty hard to stop him from getting to your colossal if it places basically in front of him. His main drawback compared to both mad dogs and Karchev is that he's slower. It's only speed 4, no way of increasing it, unless you want to suddenly start throwing out Road to War.
Or slam your own Ruin a few times in the beginning.
Yeah, he's easy to get up the board, of course, naturally. He runs first turn, and then he gets one or two slams. It's a very efficient way. And it's so nice, the entire slam thing. You can actually use the slams to get up the board faster, because Karchev has the thing that lets you get up. Jumpstart. Yeah, so you don't lose any momentum later.
And jumpstart is actually really important for a list as well, since there are a lot of control effects that are knocked down on stationary, like Kalissa, for example, which if you could do that to the mad dogs, then it would be easy to create roadblocks where you tie down a few mad dogs to where you're in front of the other mad dogs, and then you start getting a big clusterfuck.
Oh, yeah, exactly. If you stationary and disrupt. The old stationary disrupt.
The old, yes.
Yes, I will learn to hate it. And so it has a lot of tricks to get out of situations that would be bad for it.
And you can also turn them around, which is very good against TK, because otherwise that's also a very good control effect against Warjacks, that you can just TK around models. And another benefit of Ruin is that you can actually give him focus. Because even if you said a Karchev doesn't camp much, it usually has a few focus points to spend.
Sure.
And you don't really want to give it to a mad dog unless it's going to hit against something really important.
Yeah, exactly. They do get blown up in games. It's less tough on you to have one of your 15 Warjacks blow up compared to one of your 2 or 3 Warjacks.
Yeah.
But it's still a lot of boxes that get blown up. I've had a game, actually, where having my Mad Dogs blown up was very important.
Because it's a good old anti-colossal trick.
Yes. I killed a Mountain King with it. It spawned whelps, and then the Mad Dogs had to blow up to partly kill whelps around it and to partly have more Mad Dogs get to move in on the same spot.
So, classic.
Yes. Spawn your whelps behind. But basically, but the thing is that if you ask the troll player, you want to have the whelps spawn in front so they can try and block off more charge lanes. But then they all just die when the warjacks blow up. But it's not a reliable tactics. The best thing is usually to not have your mad dogs blow up and not allocate. And they have 3 attacks each if they don't have to charge. So they can put out quite a lot of damage. 3 attacks is with their initial and the focus they get. Okay, so that's the list we're going to try out. The list will be 12 Mad Dogs, 1 Ruin, and 2 Gubber Tinkerers. The drawback is that it's a lot less boxes. We've moved from... The initial list has beautiful 499 boxes. So we've removed 93 and put back 34, which is some number. But a little over 60, basically 60 boxes than the original list, but more punchy. So what are we gonna, because we're gonna have a game after we record this podcast, and we're going to come back and have some thoughts on the game. So what are we going to play against?
I'm going to play my Serialist, which is Isiria with a Hyperion and a Chimera. And then I have Alara running Discordia and a unit of Electromancers, two Heavy Rifle teams, and Gareth Vissian, the Dragoon solo. Silas, two Arcanists, and Iris 2, which is maybe a weird choice in most games.
Yes.
Or most lists.
Yeah, he's an important part as well. That list is, it's not a lot of parts.
No.
It's a very small footprint list, but it's very effective. I'd say playing against it, it's very centered around a Colossal that is very hard to kill and that does a lot of work.
And it has both a lot of shooting protection with Disco Bubble and Blinding Light. And a lot of, or not a lot of shooting, but enough shooting. It's high quality attacks, and you get enough shooting attacks to put down a heavy a turn, basically.
Exactly.
And then you can disrupt another heavy with Ares, which against most lists means that they cannot kill your Colossal. Against Mad Dogs, it might be a problem, because removing two yaks is not really a big dent in the list.
It's a small dent.
It's a small dent. But I think it's beneficial against Mad Dogs to have a small footprint list, to be able to put out a lot of attacks in a small place and destroy the Mad Dogs that are closest and then get countercharged by as little as possible.
I think so too.
And against this list, Iris might be very important because it can disrupt Ruin. So Ruin cannot go into Hyperion and remove Inviolable Resolve.
Exactly. Maybe the fact that there's a lot of lists that actually can disrupt Ruin makes it not as good as we are hoping to include Ruin. I don't know.
Maybe.
Maybe. Because Signar is another one of the factions where you want Ruin to be able to hit hard. And they have a lot of disruption abilities.
Yeah, but the main disruption abilities are Pod from the Stonewall and Thorn, I would say. And the Stonewall has to go really close. It has to be within 7 almost of Ruin to Pod over him. And if it's within 7 of Ruin, he's within range of all the Mad Dogs and probably Karshev.
True. Although you want the Stormwall to be within 9 of Ruin.
So yeah, that's of course not that big of a window.
Maybe we should talk about in general what you are afraid of when you play Karchev, or more what you should do against Karchev if you run into it. Because in my opinion, the list is that good that you should think about what you do against it if you go to a tournament. I think it will be popular.
Or I think so too.
At least among those that are willing to get a dozen Mad Dogs somehow, buy an assemble or loan it.
And I think it's both in list construction. You obviously need a lot of damage output to get through all the boxes. But you also need to play in a certain way, because having a big alpha against the Mad Dog list and sending in all your troops is usually not going to be very good.
At least it's not going to be enough. As the Karchev player, you're not afraid of a list that has one big turn, because you can't get to enough of the Mad Dogs to have it matter. There are no turns that good in the game. Ossian comes close.
Yeah, we've counted on it. He can kill about 7 Mad Dogs in turn.
But the Karchev player, or the Ossian player, needs to be very careful not to have his strike force bowled over when the Mad Dogs come slamming over each other.
I think Ossian is one of the lists where you can have a good game, but you need to play well. You need to be aware of the threats of lists, because Mad Dogs threat a lot further than you think. With, like we said, slams and just running into things. Probably, if you're playing a list like that, you want to basically shoot a little. If you have a strike force with Ares 3, it's very good, because you can shoot and then reform back. And you can give the list maybe a few hard targets, I would say. If you give it, like, if you don't give it enough defeat, but if you give it something that's not that easy to kill, it can be very close, but it can still be in threat range. Then the Mad Dogs have a hard time killing it.
Exactly. Because that is another thing, another problem with the lists that go in big and try to alpha, is that usually they are very vulnerable to Karchev's counter. Not just the counter charges per se, but the turn thereafter. Because if the Karchev list gets a big feat turn, then it kills the world.
So you need to do enough damage and be cautious enough to not get a big feat turn, but still stay relevant to the game and stay relevant to scenario, of course.
you have a list that doesn't match up well for it, then you probably need to start aiming for Karchev, or if you are below. But the main thing that you need to do is have a list that can out-attrition it. And that means something that can have a lot of damage output over several turns.
So something like a Synergy Caster. I think it's hard to play Infantry against it. Basically, even Weapon Master Infantry can be a problem. I've played Epic Virus with double Sentinels in it, which is pretty good. Because then you have inf that are pretty high armor, which is actually useful against tramples and slams. And they obviously hit hard, and they both have Vengeance and Virus Feet. If you can charge in and feet with Virus, it makes it hard for the Karchev to have an effective counter-strike. So that list can be good, but just having Weapon Master Infantry to kill Jax is not going to work.
No.
I think, as a general strategy.
Did you win with the Virus?
I did not.
No?
It was a very close game. I think I lost like 5 Sentinels and had another 3-4 knockdown before I could do anything. Like on Karchev's Alpha, where he slammed 2 Mad Dogs over me. Because I played like positioned very poorly and I didn't really see the angle he could get with a run and slam.
Yeah.
And that meant that I was behind, and then I was able to get back up pretty well. So I had a Syndri and Imperatus, and Imperatus was able to get in and hit Mad Dogs hard, and then sidestep back to not really being that big of a problem. And then the Sentinels did a lot of work, even if half of them were dead. With Virus's Feet, you could basically not kill anything, because everything moved around. But then the scenario was Recon, and he pushed on scenario, and I had to commit Imperatus a bit, and then... He died, and then I couldn't kill Karchev, and then it was over.
A lot of my games end up like that as well. I mean, there is a big attrition going on, and the mentioning of scenario is important because the list is very strong on scenario. You don't need a control feat when you have 15 heavies on the table.
It's really hard to play scenario against it,
yep.
Especially with all the counter charges.
And it's very important not to lose on scenario, of course, if you're going to try to out-attrition the list. Because there are a lot of lists that can out-attrition it if they get enough turns.
Yeah.
Because they win in the end after the Karchev feet turn. And once he starts losing Mad Dogs, the efficiency of the list goes down. But the problem is, can you not lose on scenario by then? So you need... It's good to have some trick of having you stay in the game. Or just have a fast enough list that can out-attrition before it wins on scenario. Once again, Synergy Casters. We haven't tried it against Amon, but we think
I think Johan played against it once and lost.
Yeah.
But I haven't heard exactly what happened or how it went.
That's probably pretty bad.
Yeah, especially Synergy Casters that are immune to knockdown. So Amon with a book is a problem.
Yep.
And like the list healer in Retribution is also very good against list.
Yep.
Because knockdown is a pretty big... part of the list.
Exactly. That's how you land your attacks. If you have to roll to hit with your mat 5 heavies, you get very inefficient with the attacks.
Especially against the 13-14 heavy.
Exactly.
Like against Imperatus, it takes a lot of Mad Dogs to kill.
Okay. Do we have anything else, or should we move on to the game?
Let's play a game and see what happens.
Yay! Okay, see you all in a bit. Or for you, it will just be a second, but for us, it will be a long, long time. Hopefully not. We're going to play this on time, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Yeah. See you soon.
Okay, so we're back after the game. We just had a 2-hour rather sweaty game.
Yeah, grind.
Yeah,
fest.
It was sweaty both metaphorically and literally.
Exactly.
It's kind of hot in this room. What actually ended up happening in this particular game was that I, as the Karchev player, timed out against the Syrian. We played, what's it called?
Entrenched.
Entrenched. So it's two rectangular zones with an objective in the middle of each, and you can score on your own zone. I try to use that as my main winning condition because I have so many heavies So at least in the second half of the game, I used that as my tactic to try and box away the Colossal, which is the main offender.
It worked pretty well.
Yeah, it did. I started scoring, but I couldn't keep him from contesting on his turns, even though I had counter charge up.
Went pretty slowly. So in the end, you only had... You would have scored your third point the turn you timed out.
Yep, exactly. But the Colossal was far away, which he had to be all the time, because he had to do a lot of work. A lot of Mad Dogs died over the game. I'd say Aeris was...
pretty key.
Yeah, just as annoying as we thought you would be. It's actually a big problem for the list when you have... when I tried using Ruin as my heavy hitter, so I kept Karchev far away from the Colossal. In hindsight, when you face Aeris 2, in this case, or something else that disrupts... Not if you face Aeris 1, but if you face something that disrupts that is not Aeris 1, you should probably switch places so you actually use Karchev as your main hitter. Try to get him in there. He has a longer threat as well. And him together with one or two Mad Dogs should bring the Colossal down on feet turn.
Yeah.
Discordia was a big problem because she hits... She hits very hard.
She hits with power 18 with Darkenist, and she has Shintak Smite, which is good when there are Mad Dogs everywhere that you can smite into each other.
Exactly. So she helped Aeris get the line of sight lanes you needed with smiting. And she also can move away, so she can clear out one Mad Dog, either by killing it or slamming it. Or she slammed one Mad Dog, killed one other, and moved away.
Yeah.
So she was extremely effective at helping the Colossal. And Christopher had to, or maybe didn't have to, but gave her away a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't have to. I did a smart play, and then I did this, but it was not smart in hindsight.
So I feed it basically to remove her.
But the turn before that, Ruin had moved up, and I could charge him with Discordia. So I charged him at an angle and slammed him out of Karchev's control area. And he was knocked down. So I thought that's fine. And then Disco repositioned a bit, but still within six. And then Karchev... But then I had to run something into zone to contest his zone. And when I did that, Karchev countercharged that model. And even if he couldn't get into melee, he got into control.
Yeah, he got Ruin back in his control.
Ruin back in control. Yeah. And then... And that was... He could allocate and jumpstart Ruin, and then even though Ruin had lost his arms, he killed Discordia with the feet.
Yeah. He's pretty badass.
He is.
When he's in the his control area of the caster.
Yeah.
So the game basically played out as you would have expected. It's the usual Mad Dog thing. It's a lot of models, because this is the Hyperion list. With Isira is a list that can output a lot over a lot of turns.
Yeah.
But it can also get pushed out of scenarios.
Yeah.
So the small footprint helps it in that it can reach the correct places, and I have to spread out more than it has to.
And you can't really counter charge effectively.
Exactly. My counter charges were not as effective as they can be. But that's often the case against a good player.
Yeah.
But it takes... It's a really difficult mind game.
Like when you think about the match, or when you think about the list, it seems like, you know, well, let's just all those jacks. You push everything forward and you push back with your army. But it's actually kind of a puzzle for both players, especially with counter charges. Like, you can move this guy up and get that guy, but then he can counter charge. But that other guy is in the way of him moving, but he could move anyway, so he could get in a better spot. And then maybe three guys counter charge, he could move all of them into a new formation and...
I actually ate up quite a bit of my time thinking of proper counter charge angles, whether or not I could counter charge my way out of troubles.
Exactly.
Which is, of course, something that you need to, if you're going to play this list at a tournament, the Karchev list, you have to be cognizant of that. That can eat up a lot of your time.
Yeah. So you need both, like, think beforehand or think in the opponent's turn and be practice really, so you know, like, how you can counter charge, and then also see that sometimes it might not be worth it to make a really complex counter charge. Maybe
exactly, don't think too much of the counter charges. I've had games when I've tried the list before where usually it's pretty obvious if you want to counter charge, and usually you can't counter charge, but that is because your opponent has wasted resources to deny it. You can deny the counter charge capabilities, but it usually costs. So all in all, it was a pretty tight game.
It was. I think the lists are pretty evenly matched up, I guess. It depends on the scenario and who was first. And
I would say in our games before, the serialist is pretty difficult for Kador to handle. But the only way I've been able to win against it is when the scenario allows it. When you can,
when it's like a spread out scenario that you can.
Exactly. When you can either control your own zone away from the Colossal, or if it's Outlast, when you have two different zones, that helps against the list a lot. And I don't know if it's just one. On the other hand, all the Mad Dogs get to bunch up, like we saw in the game when Jarle played in the Iron Gauntlet finals. Or not the Iron Gauntlet finals, the semi-finals of the Invitational, when Jarle was beat, when there were so many Mad Dogs and Karchev against the Colossal that couldn't get out once it started swinging, or it couldn't get away from enough of them. So any parting thoughts?
I don't know. Maybe we should say which objectives we used.
Yeah, right. We both used Stockpile. Stockpile, from the Mad Dog list point of view, is very important and very, very good. It is basically impossible to shoot it off the table because you have four or five heavies surrounding it ready to be sacked off to. And also, since you burn your movement boxes a lot by running, you always have someone to heal next to it because they only have three rounds of running. And after the third one, they lose the ability to countercharge, which is also important. So you never want to use that last movement box unless it's important. So
it helps them heal back up.
Yeah, exactly, because Stockpile heals them up.
Yes. I use it basically for the same reason, that it's impossible to shoot out with Hyperion or Disco Close. And then it's also like it can heal the jacks, especially if you're like, you can be quite defensive around the objective, and if you're in a shooting fight, it like every little bit helps.
On the list, I would say Ruin is good, but he loses a lot of effectiveness against opponents that can disrupt him.
I don't know if there's other control that's annoying. It's like there's some fringe cases like Epic Nemo's gun.
Exactly. It is just, it's guns, so disruption is probably a big thing because since he's immune to spells, narrows it down. The Tinkerers, which I'm not used to playing with, actually, one of them played a pivotal role in denying my own countercharge lanes, so it's just in the way. They actually never did, they did a repair once.
They repaired one movement box in total.
Yeah, they were not useful at all. Probably I would need to practice more with them if I were to use them.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to have them in the correct spot and not be in the way, because you have to make sure your lanes are open during your opponent's turn as well as the Karchev player. So it's pretty hard to have those models be effective. So I'm not sure that they are.
That's good. Like if you could cycle Mad Dogs back, pair them, and then go forward again. But I guess that takes too much. Many turns.
Yeah, it takes a lot of effort. If I had the old toe, maybe I could go grab him and drop him off at the pit stop.
Yeah, okay.
It's a classic old Mark II technique that never works.
But it's definitely an effective list, as we've seen before. Like now it's played against something that can put up a lot of damage and also can retreat back, has a Colossal which is hard to kill, and it still had a very, at least, even game.
Yeah, and that is against one of the lists that, in our meta at least, is thought of as one of the most difficult to play against. A lot of people are thinking what to do against Christopher and his Isiria list. So this list is definitely not a for funsies list. It's,
no, it is not.
Nothing's fun about it. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, actually.
I think it's a lot of fun. Actually, it's pretty fun to play against as well. Even if it's also like you start crying a bit.
Yeah.
It's like it's a puzzle or a chess game almost.
Yeah, it's very straightforward. There are no effects like controlling your stuff or telling you can't do this, you can't do this. You can do whatever you want. Just know that I'm going to punch you in your turn. Okay, so that's it for this episode.
Yeah, thank you for listening.
Yeah, and you can find us online if you want to get in touch with us on Twitter. I'm at Joachim Rapp.
And I'm at Slim Kruger.
Okay, so take care, everyone.
See you next time.